Hi, and welcome to another edition of Visions. And today, our show is going to be and still I have in the studio with me Gerard Aline, and many people know him as Lord Zen, and the producer Anne Polito. So we're going to be talking about Scammer Life, a theater play, a theater production that is currently on, and more specifically about the Accessibility Night, which was held recently. So welcome to Visions, Gerard and Anne.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yes, thank you. Hello.
Right, great. So let me start with you, Gerard, and share with us, you know, how you got into theater, how you got into being a comedian online, because you're extremely popular online as Lord Zen. So share with us briefly, please.
Yeah, no problem. So my journey, I would say, started back at NIFCA. I don't remember the exact year, but this would have been around 2006-07. I got into NIFCA. My mom had written two pieces for me to enter NIFCA that year. I ended up winning silver and performing at the gala my first year. During that year as well, Cicely Spencer-Cross from Laugh It Off had seen me on stage, and she invited myself and Crispin to come and be a part of Laugh It Off the following year. So we did Laugh It Off the following year, and that really was where I started to develop my own sensibility around maybe Bajan comedy. I might say comedy in general, definitely, but the sensibility of Bajans. I really started to understand Bajan comedy, I would say, from Laugh It Off for myself, because my mom had written the stuff for NIFCA and directed as well. So I was kind of operating under her comedic sensibility. I started to form my own ideas and my own voice in being on stage with the Laugh It Off veterans, being directed by Cicely Spencer-Cross. At some point, Gale Theatre Company of London and Barbados, they came over from London, and they were using some Bajan professionals, some UK professionals, and some Bajan amateur actors, myself being one of the amateur actors that was part of the process. And through that process, they liked my work and ended up sending me to London to do a four-week course at the Royal Academy of Dramatic Arts. And at this time, I think we are about 2008, maybe. From there, I really enjoyed that course, so decided I wanted to study acting in London. So came back, got my audition pieces together, registered to audition for what I understood to be the three top drama schools in London at the time. So that would have been the one that I did the four-week course at, RADA, Lambda, and Guildhall. I ended up getting into Guildhall, studied there for 3 years, got a scholarship to cover my tuition for the first year of study from the Peter Morris Trust Foundation. So studied in London 2009 to 2012. Then between the visa regulations changing and me really wanted to tell stories in Barbados, I ended up coming back to Barbados, where I then got into a bunch of other things. But one of the things I got into when I came back was content creation, because that was just now taking off on Facebook and YouTube. So I started putting out my own content, and then more people knew me for content than for theater, to the degree that when I tell people that I do theater, they don't know that I did theater. People more know me for the content. So did that for a few years. Then my mom wrote a play for me in 2017 called Good Looking, which we ended up staging in 2017. Put that on, and then I went over to Canada to study for a couple years. I did stand-up comedy over in Canada up until 2020. Then the pandemic happened. So then I was just paying Toronto rent, but I couldn't be a part of the Toronto entertainment scene. So I went back home because I was like, I'm not paying this rent if I can't make any money. But in coming back home, was still putting out content, ended up doing radio for a little bit at 106.7 with Peter Coppin. That was a good experience. Ended up leaving because I wanted to do more theater. And that's kind of where we are now, where I do content, I do theater, I do stand-up comedy. And I would say that the content is the main driving engine for people knowing about me doing all these other things. Or that's how I let people know that I'm putting on a theater production or a stand-up comedy show or what have you. So
Now, with Scammer Life,
Mm-hmm.
the focus last weekend was having an accessibility night where audio description was provided for the blind, sign
Yeah.
language interpretation for the deaf, and of course, ensuring that persons who are wheelchair users or have mobility challenges were able to access the venue pretty nice. What were your original thoughts, both you and Anne, in terms of including accessibility? Because generally, theater productions, most productions, do not really focus on audio description or even sign language interpretation. Yes, there may be some thought going into making sure that it's wheelchair accessible and so on, but not the audio description and the sign language. Share your thoughts behind this.
I'll tell you where I came in on this, Yudli. So for me, I want Bajans to come out to my productions to see Bajan characters on stage doing a certain kind of storytelling. And through my travels and study and engaging with Bajan theater and the whole entertainment scene, I got my own sensibility around how I want to explore or showcase Bajan culture for Bajans and Caribbean people, I would say. And then eventually the world. So I want these people to see my stories. And I think where I plugged into the accessibility night, or why it spoke to me, was because there is a segment of Bajan society that's not being reached with my stories. If I do these live shows, would I be missing this whole segment of the Bajan public? And then if we do get to take it to the Caribbean public as well. So it wasn't my idea. Anne actually came to me with the idea, is what I'm saying. But when she did come to me with the idea, it was like, well, that just makes sense. And how do we make the show accessible? And I think that that was my beginning of the journey into this process. Because as I said, it was Anne's idea from the start. She was the person that said, I think we need to do this. And here are some possibilities for how it might work. So that was my thinking around it. And I can let Anne speak to where she was coming from.
Yeah, I think you're also forgetting. So Gerard also really loves Shakespeare, and the idea of like Shakespeare putting on shows for everybody was also like a consideration for even where we put on the show and why we chose the Steel Shed as opposed to like a more like formal theater space, as well as thinking about like, well, how are we going to price the ticket so that it's like at a accessible price so that finances aren't like such a barrier, right? So I think in thinking about all of that, that was also on Gerard's mind. And so for me too, my background is in working with nonprofit. And I think we would have talked about this last time I was on your show. I worked with specifically young people, and I was like in social justice adjacent communities where people were thinking about accessibility, people thinking about, marginalized groups and how to, make spaces so that everyone can join or be a part of the conversations. And so I think that's also the other thing. We're also trying to work on getting a show for students and trying to expose more young people to theater or the arts or culture in a way that is accessible to them and not like making the play something that's like a theater show and associating it with older people. And I think I'll let Gerard talk about that later as well. But yeah, that was really the whole thing. It was like, okay, well, what if we made this accessible? And then seeing that there weren't any protocols in place outside of asking a question of is this space accessible? It's like, yeah, it is. It should be fine. So we just began to ask more and more questions and consult. And you were one of those people, Yuli, and other people we were consulting about what we could provide. And that was pretty much it. It was just a curiosity, and we just kept exploring it and asking more questions and then decided to do something.
Well, I have to say that I absolutely, totally appreciate the audio description because I am a cultural person. I am an artsy person. I'm a creative person. And I have been attending quite a few shows and concerts and all types of productions. And sometimes the person who accompanies me is not always as descriptive as I would like. So I feel as though I have been shortchanged in not being able to fully access the productions. So having audio description is like magic. It allowed me to see the set, see the colors that the actors were wearing, get a gauge of what the character looks like, and it was fabulous. So hats off to both of you and then the full production team for really incorporating accessibility and not having it as a add-on, you know?
I love that actually. Thank you.
Good, good. So,
Yes,
Durant,
please.
how do you see your comedic line, using comedy as a way of bringing social change, really creating the awareness? Because in this play, you highlighted mental health issues, the need for good mental health, and included in there was disability as well, because one of the characters was a wheelchair user. So speak to us about how you see comedy as a way of really raising awareness and bringing about some of the social change and cultural change that we need in Barbados to address these type of delicate yet hard topics.
I think where I plugged in was I really wanted to look at some of the conversations that I heard being had. And I wanted to explore how the pressures of society might end up tampering with a person's mind, or what we collectively are dealing with might lead to some of those mental health challenges in a way that was still humorous and engaging. In terms of the wheelchair bound character, I think a big part of what I wanted to do with him specifically was, I think sometimes when I see characters written who have disabilities, and there's nothing wrong with this type of storytelling, but they kind of become off to the side or not really a part of the main action. So with that character, I want people to see a person who was very beijing in a way that we could recognize, and also flawed in a way that is very relatable to beijings. Like, I feel like so many people came up to me and told me they know a character like Sydney. His story wasn't necessarily as in your face, because I never really directly say how he ended up in the wheelchair or why he was there. You just see him taking part in the action. And I wanted that to be something that I explored in this story as well.
As you said, you didn't introduce Sydney, but he's there. So you don't always need to introduce, because as you walk around in your communities or just walking around, you see people and you just deal with it.
Exactly.
Right.
Okay,
Okay,
good.
cool. Okay, so then what would you say to young people with disabilities who may have felt that the entertainment space was not accommodating to them, very accessibility? Because your team, and I have to really credit Anne for including disability, because now it's being more promoted as a right to come and see this show, a right to see this production, as opposed to, okay, let me feel sorry for these disabled people and just include them.
I mean, as far as our mission goes, we ourselves want to do better. And I think that that's where our focus is. And I think to the community, I would say, I believe it is a right. You know what I mean? We should all be coming together to think about how we can make this possible. And I'm not in a position to, speak to who should be doing more. I could just speak for what me and my team intend to do going forward. So, to members of the community, I hope that this production has been the start of a dialogue. Like Anne and myself and our team, we would like to, in fact, hear how we could do it better. Yeah, man, feel free to reach out to us with any thoughts or feedback. We're very open to that on how we could improve moving forward. And yeah, it should be in place.
Yeah, I think just like talking to other people who are working in the live production space, because there were some challenges, right? Like, I think we went into the whole process knowing we weren't going to do it perfectly, but we're going to try and make an attempt. And then this was always meant to be one stepping stone towards, future progress, whatever that looks like, with the ultimate goal of, yeah, being able to just offer it for all live productions that we're a part of. And people not having to think twice about whether or not they could participate, right? So I think for younger people who, don't feel included because of accessibility issues, I think, yeah, it should be asking the questions. I think on our end, is also just talking to people about what it is that we're doing. Like, I plan at least on like doing a report and kind of sharing a resource guide and being like, well, this is what we're doing, right? We've had other people in theater that we are working with and kind of communicating about the work that we're doing, not so that we can get credit or anything, but more so just like, hey, this is what we're doing. This is what we did. Here's the process. Here's what we learned. Hopefully you guys can do this. So yeah, I think younger people, specifically like Gen Z and younger, are like a lot more outspoken. And I know people say that about millennials perhaps, but I'm excited for like how people are going to advocate for themselves. And I think in Barbados, with all of this legislation that is like passing, and I think like accessibility being a concept that more and more Bajans, the average Bajan, is learning about, is also exciting. And so I think that there's like a lot of momentum to push these kinds of things forward so that people with disabilities can be a part of these cultural conversations.
Okay, nice. And your point is really crucial, because your work in making the Accessibility Night a reality will encourage other producers, other organizers, other directors to consider making it an Accessibility Night. And this now will drive the desire by the community of people with disabilities to also want to ensure that it happens. Okay, yes, years ago, it didn't really happen in this way. But again, as knowledge grows, as more and more information is shared, then it allows us to advocate better and be a bit more specific in what is required, what is needed. So I think we're moving in the right direction.
Nice.
Okay, so Gerard, I'm asking you now, when you think of what you have witnessed that night and the other nights of the show, mm-hmm. what would you say was like one of the key points or the key moment awareness for you as you observed the audience and their reactions to the mental health struggle that is being experienced by, you know, Barbadians?
Yeah, the way that I approach theater is about engaging people first. So my number one priority is to engage people and to keep them engaged from beginning to end. And that was one of the pieces of feedback that we got a lot. A lot of people said they were either laughing from beginning to end or engaging from beginning to end. But as they go away, they go, but you know, Joyanne was right, you know. Not that I agree with Joyanne, but that continuing to question or ask yourself questions, or, you know, somebody can feel like, well, Sydney had a point. But then somebody else can feel like, well, what am I doing in the woman house? And then as we move through it and we relate these things back to real life, the idea of being taken advantage of in a certain way and what that might do to your thing, you go away laughing. But as you sit down and you have these conversations with the people that you came with or other people that saw the show, as I started off saying, we're holding up a mirror to society, it then becomes about that self-exploration. And it starts with, one, my own perspective, but then you hear somebody else's perspective and you have your perspective challenged through that. So I think that's been happening. My hope is that that is also happening around mental health, that maybe the conversation starts with a laugh or a smile, but that we can also take the time to have a bit more of a serious discussion around the ways that we treat mental health in the Caribbean and in Barbados, the way that we might be able to do something better, perhaps the impact that our current living circumstances are having on person's mental health, how seriously we should be taking it, what some of the consequences might be. My aim is to be a catalyst for those conversations. But to me, it starts with engaging people and hooking them in with entertainment first. Yes.
I quite agree with you. Mm-hmm. Now, both you and Anne have lived outside of Barbados mm-hmm. and have seen the approaches that are used in countries like Canada, the UK, and the US around disability and mental health, as well as entertainment, the whole theater production scene. What are your thoughts when you look at what is currently existing and happening in Barbados around mental health and theater productions, the whole entertainment area? And, you know, what are your thoughts about persons with disabilities being included, people who are actually lived experiences with mental health and so on?
Yeah, I think to Gerard's point earlier, to call back what he said about Sydney's character being in a wheelchair, that wasn't the focal point. And sometimes I think in places like North America or the UK, the storytelling is like focused more on like making these characters more full and having like personalities that are like outside of their disability, even though their disability might inform like how they navigate the world and they might go through a different set of challenges, which are also central to their story. But I think in the US, there's a show in particular where there's a character, a best friend with a disability, and he's not the nicest person. He's a jerk. And he, I think, like similar to Sydney, like is very opinionated, isn't polite. And I think seeing more full characters like that, and they don't also have to be like that way. They don't have to go to that extreme. But I think like looking at these people as like real people who are just navigating the world in a different way, and that being like an, oh, okay, this is what's happening. I think more of those stories are beginning to show up. More actors with disabilities are in a lot more like media and TV shows, like you saw Wicked, for example, with one of the characters in a wheelchair. So I think there's more of that happening. And I think in Barbados, slowly catching up to that, like we would have had Chris, who attended the show and did our audit of the venue. He's in a dance group and he's a dancer. So I think Barbados is like trying to make more space for that. I think Barbados is trying. I think people are very open to the idea of accessibility as well. Every time we talk about it, I think it's something that they don't react negatively to, and people are more open. So I think that is like another thing that I've observed where in the States or in these other places, it's more of a kind of like people just expect these things and people are more open to accessibility. But here, I think you kind of have to cue people to be more inclusive.
Yeah, I think for me, through my bouncing between Barbados and some of these international spaces over the years, I think my sensibility has become that there's a lot to learn from these spaces. And that's definitely what we experienced this time as well. There's a lot to learn from these spaces, but you gotta make sure you always making what you take from these spaces relevant to Barbados. So, accessibility is a foregone conclusion in a lot of theaters in Toronto, London, America. We know that it's done a certain way and that is always on offer. And that much we won't take and bring to Barbados. And this has been my experience both creatively and on the logistics side as well. Whenever you take in anything from those spaces, you gotta always remain alive and dynamic to how does that practically work within the context of Barbados? Or how does that work within the context of the outcome that we specifically trying to achieve here now? And I think that that going forward will be key. Yes, look at the international spaces and what they're doing and think about what elements of that we want here in Barbados and then also remain alive to, so what's the work that needs to happen to get the very specific outcome that we're looking for within this context of Barbados. That wordy, but that makes sense.
Of course, I understood it.
All right, good. Thank you.
So, as we continue along this line, Gerard and Anne, let's see, what would you consider as success, like within the next year or two, as a result of the effort, the work that you have put into creating this production, making sure that it's extremely accessible to people with disabilities, and to discuss an extremely sensitive topic in terms of mental illness, good mental health, and really looking at how Barbadian society can improve and bring about positive changes. How would you measure success in a year to 2 years' time as a result of
Nice.
the staging of this production?
Yeah, for me, this has been a huge learning experience. I am a person, I like to think globally. So even when I sit down to write, I am thinking all the way through to how something's gonna land or how at very least I want it to land. So I did that for this process, but so many things changed all the way up to the execution, and we learned so many things, not just with accessibility and what goes into making that a reality in Barbados, but the entire process. So now we're taking all these learnings forward, and my hope is that we can step it up in one way or another. So I don't know if I'll be able to write another play by next year, but if I did, I will hope that a win for me will look like two accessibility nights at minimum. Already, ultimate vision being all of my nights accessible, all of my nights offer these features. That would be my ultimate win, but at least a nudge forward will register as a win for me. I think we have to go through a process as well of knowing who to contact for certain things. If I'm being honest, I think that I don't know if everybody understood how serious we were about doing what it is that we were trying to do, or that when me and my team says, I mean, we got a certain amount of follow through. So I would hope that in getting in touch in the future, that everybody knows that when we say we want to do it like this, we mean it, even though we're still trying to do it better. I think that's me.
Yeah, for me, I think a lot of things, as the person who is running the logistics, as well as with my colleague Yemi Knight, who is working with me and sourcing a lot of the things that we needed to make this accessibility night happen. I think success for me would, in addition to what Gerard said of being able to have more accessibility nights, I guess I'd love for organizations, whether that's bodies like the NCF or like other venues, just generally like having or investing in accessibility, like for their like annual budget. So for example, we had to rent things like these headsets, these transmitters, right? If that was just present at a lot of venues that people could use for their events, I think people would be a lot more open to being able to, offer audio descriptions for events. I would like to see that. To me, that would be success. I think as well, people also starting with being really clear about their events, like how accessible it is, and being okay with starting small, saying things like, this is a wheelchair accessible venue or with wheelchair accessible bathrooms, and just being clear. And I think to me, like these small steps would be successes or wins for me. And I think as well, like just thinking about young people, again, also setting that example, I'd love to see like young people also like carrying that or like taking on some of what we learned and incorporating that as like a normal part of their production. So I don't know how, but that would be a success for me.
Fabulous. Well, Gerard and Anne, it really has been a pleasure chatting with you. We're learning how theater is not just theater, but it's a stage allowing for courage, for commitment, and resilience. And we are seeing that in Scam Our Lives, that wonderful production. We're seeing it in how you made accessibility features available to a community that is usually left out. So I want to say thank you so much and wish you success in your continued work. And I'm looking forward to seeing more productions from you.
Thank you so much, Yudling, and thanks for having us.
Yes, please. Thank you.
Thank you, my pleasure. And now we have the views of Kerri-Ann Ifill and Alinda Brathwick, two patrons with vision impairment, who will share their thoughts about the audio description feature that was provided on the night.
When I was approached by the producers of Scammer Life and asked how to make the play accessible to persons with disabilities, I thought this was the most amazing thing. The fact that they came to the community and asked how we can help it. They didn't set up a series of guessworks. They didn't follow YouTube. They didn't go with what best practice internationally says they should do. They came to the people, to the audience they were drawing in. So attending the play on Sunday night was already a win-win for me because they wanted to make it inclusive. And it truly was an inclusive experience. The audio description was very good. They don't talk through the play. You can tell that these people did their research, they did some training, they did rehearsals, they practiced, they knew. The braille was very much appreciated, the volunteers. But for me, the crowning point of the evening was the audio description, letting me know who was wearing what, where the person was, what they were doing, their gestures, the decor of the room. The whole experience was excellent. And I would love to see more local productions incorporate meaningful, real, inclusive support. So kudos to the producers of Scammerlife.
Good morning, Yudeli, and to your Visions audience as well. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to share my opinion on the audio description feature in the recent play Scam Your Life last week, Sunday, January 18th. Personally, I think it was an excellent initiative, and I would encourage other local theater personnel to adopt it, as it would, you know, let blind and visually impaired feel more included, as well as enhance our enjoyment of such shows. Thank you very much.
You have been listening to Visions with me, Yudeli Wickham Ashby. And remember, you can reach out to me on 1-246-269-9660 or 1-246-430-7300. And you can check this and past episodes by going to vob929.com website. So until next week, take care.